session number 22246, reel 2.
PT shorts underneath the Denison smock, which virtually looked as if you had no blaster trousers on at all. Small pack, your weapons, of course, and your trousers, your boots, one blanket, and ground sheet were rolled up in horseshoe fashion over your pack and tied loosely in the front. Well, it so happened we left this particular night, and I was number one taskman. Well, I hadn't been down on this particular patrol before, but the chappie, number two taskman behind me, stupid, of course, he said, lead the way. He said, well, do keep over, kid. He said, there's a heck of a lot of foxholes around here. Well, this had just got dark, mind you. Everything was quiet. You couldn't see a thing. We had two snipers with us. We used to drag a sniper's boat behind us with a sniper's rifle and equipment. We were pretty heavily equipped. And LMGs, you know, the Bren guns. And carry our own personal weapons with us. However, cut a long story short, I didn't keep over. I kept over to the left instead of the right, or vice versa, and of course went straight into one of these foxholes. Well, of course, at this time, the water was pretty cold, leaving me pretty numb. I shouted pretty loudly, and of course everything opened up on top of us. Very lights went up, Jerry started opening up, and I lost my trousers, ground sheet, blanket. Everything virtually floated away over my head, you see, in the swirling water. However, we got down to this village safe and sound after a bit of a skirmish, and took over from the other lads that were already down there, sent them off back. How they fared, I don't know. We got into the village, took up positions, and from then, sort of, morning came. I was sort of on stake this particular night with a blanket wrapped around me, like a wog, you see. I thought, well, this can't be. I can't sort of stay here for 24 hours, or until we're relieved, if everything goes all right. This blasted blanket stuck around me like a skirt. So I thought, well, I'd go on a recce for a little bit of loot. Went in this Dutch house I sort of found, and found a beautiful bright pair of blue Dutch trousers, you see. I thought, this'll do me. And I was the only chap around for weeks after I still had these blessed trousers on. I couldn't get a replacement, we just had no kit at all. I was sniped at on this occasion, actually. Jerry was up a tree further across, and I had a bullet that missed my head by inches, virtually. One of our other snipers got him after he sort of opened up and fired at me. It was all quite disconcerting.
How far away would that have been? You know, how close were they?
Oh, somewhere about 250 yards.
Yes.
And of course, we were waiting for them to come out all the time. You know, and we had LMG brand positions actually in the church and surrounded ourselves with LMG covering, arc firing, etc. Yes. A little bit of action there, but not an awful lot.
What had happened to all the villagers? Where were they? Where had they gone?
Well, they'd been evacuated or just cleared out of it, quite honestly. Yes. Just couldn't stick it. Yes. We were very short of food actually at that time, and we'd lost some of the rations on this boat episode, and we lost one of the boats on one of the patrols. We hadn't known anything about it. We thought there was sugar down there. I thought, well, I'll get our section sweetened up, our tea sweetened up, etc. We had tea all right. I went and found what I thought at that time was treacle. It turned out to be molasses. It all gave us a touch of the runs. I was the most popular bloke in the section, but apart from that, all right. Well, after that, we moved up to a smaller village, actually, further back. And from there, we used to go over on a fighting patrol across the river, actually, on these salt boats. And I took a particular section across there this particular day. We returned with two prisoners, actually. I think it was a Jerry lieutenant and his batman, possibly, or his wireless operator, whatever the case may be. And they spotted us, actually, with his 88s on the other side. And that was the time I was actually hit. I was just gone back to the back of the section to see if the last chap was all right, to hurry them up a bit.
Yes.
And Jerry got a spot on us, and by what they told me, I remember just a puff of wind, virtually, and a bit of a crack, and I understand there were two 88 shells dropped very close to us, and being like the last chap at the section at this particular time, I caught it. I can remember one of the other chaps coming back saying, okay, you've been hit, get you out of here. And that's all I remember until I woke up in the Eindhoven General Hospital.
Which must have been some considerable while later then.
Oh, it must have been.
Yes.
It was possibly, you know, 36 hours. I was out for quite a long time, actually. I remember waking up and having pain in my legs and that sort of thing. Suddenly sort of feeling around with my, and it was left arm, that's right. And I found a needle sticking with my left leg. I took this out and plop, and stuck it into the mattress, and then got told off by the sister next morning. This is just, you know, the pain was so bad that I just couldn't stick, and I had to whip the needle out and put it into the mattress. I just woke up and found nurses either side. And from there I was evacuated on the ambulance train down to the 23rd Scottish General Hospital in Lille, in France. Should have been flown back to England here. The hospital train got mixed up. The casualties that should have come back to England here went to the 23rd Scottish General, and the lighter wounded people were flown home. However, I had quite a bout in hospital then. Everything went all right. And was then posted to a convalescent depot.
Right, may I ask what the extent of your wounds were?
Yes, it was multiple sort of shrapnel wounds in buttocks, back, left arm, right arm, in the eye. I was quite lucky actually to get away with it, you know. I've still got the shrapnel knocking around somewhere now, a souvenir they gave me. But this is quite funny really, because the division was moved back to England 2 days after I was hit, ready for the Rhine drop. We didn't know this was coming off at that time.
Yeah.
And I was still in convalescent depot when I actually saw the our boys flying across the Dakotas, and the doors off, gliders behind them, and all the rest of it, for the Rhine drop.
Yes.
And of course we were from, myself personally, from this convalescent home, or convalescent depot, I was posted to a holding unit in Bruges, in Belgium. Had a wonderful time there, actually. All number six commander buddies there, or either green berets or red berets were just posted there. 79 RHU, I believe it was, in Bruges. Had a wonderful time there, actually. No parades whatsoever, just sort of everyone answered the roll call, and that was it. We re-equipped this kit and
yes.
Battle dress that could possibly fit where it touched, you know. And eventually came back to England. They wouldn't let us join up with the main assault party. We were just put back as reserve troops in Balfour, awaiting the return.
Mm-hmm.
And the war ended then, of course, and I didn't see any action again after that.
Yeah.
I probably had quite enough by this time. However, after that, after the war, in fact, was settled, we were all re-equipped to issue the Jungle Green, etc., to go to the Far East. It was during this time, in fact, just a few days prior to us sailing, we'd already sent an advance party, the 6th Airborne Div, to India on the way to SEAC, Southeast Asia Command. We were actually stopped from going. Orders were all cancelled. Advance party already in India. Another advance party sent to the Middle East. We sailed, in fact, on the 23rd of September, this would be 45, to the Middle East. I went out on the Dunnottar Castle. Very nice trip out there. Didn't know what to expect at all.
Yes.
It was all about the, you know, the Jewish illegal landings and that on the Jewish coast.
Yeah.
We landed at Haifa, put into a camp at Gaza. From Gaza up to Telewinski. Nice camp just outside of Tel Aviv. Ex-Yankee camp. And from them we used to do a cordon and search business, roadblocks and nightly checks, two or three times a week into Tel Aviv to settle trouble and that sort of thing, searching for arms and all the rest of it. And I had, 20 months in the Middle East altogether. I transferred to G1 Air Staff, which was completely mobile, because I travelled the whole of the Middle East, going down to Cairo, up to Beirut. Had one leave in Beirut, Michael.
How long were you in the services altogether then?
Well, I was demobbed in February 47. I came back from Egypt in 47 to Liverpool, demobbed in Aldershot. And beginning of 48, I volunteered for the TA. I found, in fact, we had just formed in this country, a TA parachute model.
Yes.
Big company at Portsmouth, in fact, was the nearest company I meant travelling backwards and forwards, but I joined a big company, attained the rank of sergeant, which I sort of got back again after some trouble I had earlier on. And we used to do quite a lot, in fact, in this country.
You did more drops, did you, then?
Oh, good heavens, yes, I did far more drops in the TA than ever I did in the regular horses program.
Did things change much? Did the routine change much?
What, in the TA?
As regards dropping, the drops, did it change?
Oh, yes, we were over experimenting quite a lot, experimenting drops the whole time, but we were still only using one chute. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and as I mentioned previously, the 1st Canadian Parachute Battalion were with us. They were trained in Fort Worth in Texas, always with two chutes. So it was most strange when they came across here and had to use one chute only. In fact, they did have quite a number of jibbers at that time. Mm. But on the whole, I mean, they were pretty safe, really. Yes. They were well packed.
Mm.
Thank goodness. You can never take it back and say this one didn't work.
Yeah. Can I go back to the D-Day drop? You sort of skirted over that rather lightly. What was that action like?
Well, as I say, I think it was about 180 of us got to the gun battery, actually. We demolished it.
Yes.
Blew up two guns, in fact, we had to do. And then we're taken out from there. We met up with other elements, you know. Or it was quite a mixture, in fact, and eventually, you know, that things did sort of sort themselves out. We had a lot of reinforcements come out from Blighty.
Yes.
New
what would have happened to the bulk of these chaps that didn't make the correct dropping zone?
Well, a lot were taken to POW.
Yes.
We had quite a number killed, quite a number wounded, and some chaps. I mean, we saw from the time I have never seen. I mean, from the time we implanted, I never know what happened to them. There's quite a lot of action around there. I mean, that difficult to remember really exactly what happened. I remember sort of crossing a road and a pal of mine, I was acting number one on the Bren, he was sort of following me, and he was shot through the legs and sort of looked around for him and just wasn't there.
Yeah.
Went back, gave him first aid, shared it with the medics, and that was it. I think I was fortunate possibly to get away with that action.
Yes. Yeah, why I returned to that particular instance was it was the first. First occasion on which we really set foot in force on the continent, and nobody would have known quite what to expect as much as later on when the action got further inland.
Well, we were hoping and praying for backing the whole time, and we were the first lads in there, actually, apart from our Pathfinder parties.
Yes,
we were the first lads in there, and of course we know from history now that things went all right, but of course we went in with terribly mixed feelings, believe you me.
Mm.
Sort of being green to action, although we did have a certain element of the battalion had been seen action before.
Yes.
Only through being sort of transferred from other units, to the Paras. That chap is possibly some work at Dunkirk, were back and volunteered with parachute duties. Also the mixed bunch, you see, until you sort of establish yourself as a unit, actually. Mm-hmm.
Did you get many, were there cases of chaps losing their nerve and...
Very, very seldom. Now and again you get the jibber on the jump.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that used to disorganise the whole of the drop, quite honestly.
Yes.
We've had to circle the DZ, quite honestly, more than once, if you had number one freeze at the door and jib, until the dispatcher can grab him out of the way. No, I don't think anyone was ever pushed over the aircraft, and I can never remember.
Mm.
Not intentionally, in any case. Mm. I mean, they may have been helped a little bit now and again, but I don't think they pushed.
What sort of force do you actually land when you come down?
We're possibly jumping off about a 10-foot wall. Yeah. It varies, as you go. Wind could suddenly sort of gust up and whip you along a little bit. It's so difficult, really. There's certain ways of landing and falling. I mean, you could have a bad landing where you sort of come in backwards. You should come in sort of slightly off-center, either left or right drift. You could come in backwards. We had sort of ways and means of dealing with this. Yes. I mean, you could sort of crack your head quite heavily. A sudden gust of wind possibly was the most dangerous thing that could happen just prior to your landing.
Yes.
But strangely enough, with kit bags and rifle valises, which are always suspended about 12 foot below you, you release them after your chute is developed. You release your kit bag to dangle 12 foot below you. When you were jumping with heavy equipment, a kit bag, it used to somehow break your fall. We could never find out why this should be. The kit bag used to land, then yourself, and then the chute collapsed virtually over you. I mean, you could at times do a stand-up landing. You were never allowed to.
Yeah.
With anyone observing the DZ, especially on training drops, you'd had it. I mean, your chips were on the table there if you were caught standing up. You could at times stand up.
Mm-hmm.
But always the early morning and dusk were the times used for dropping. It's very seldom during the day. Especially out in the Middle East, we had a lot of trouble there with chutes not developing properly because the air wasn't sort of moist enough.
Yes.
These chutes are peculiar things. The pores has got to be closed somehow on the chute to get a real good development.
Yes, I would wonder with, were they nylon?
Nylon, yes.
Yes, with nylon, whether you'd get any sort of tendency to cling together, static electricity or anything that would make, you know, you get nylon, it sticks sometimes through static charges. Whether one would get that possibly in the hot weather, and dry and hot.
Yes, but I think, well, this may have been silk, may have been nylon these days. I can't really tell you exactly. I know the panels were made up of four gauze.
Yes.
And if you had one sort of going, even a split in it, it wouldn't matter very much. It may affect your development of the chute a little bit, but not terribly awful.
Were you able to guide yourself reasonably, you know, to where you wanted?
Well, yes, by pulling down, say, on your forward lift webs to go forward, or rear lift webs to go backwards. Right lift web, reach up as far as you possibly could and yank it down and pull it down towards you. Cause you, the right-hand side of the chute you're looking up, causing that to collapse slightly and drift to the right. You could more or less gauge where you were going, within reason, I mean, but if you were dropping in trees, you were dropped in trees, and that was it, you just couldn't do anything about it. You just sort of huddle up in the smallest amount, like a ball virtually, and sort of hit the top of the tree then.
Mm-hmm.
I never had any experience of landing in trees, thank goodness, but it could get awfully hurt getting
did
down.
Did you have any drops that went a bit awry through?
Oh, yes. Dozens of them. I had concussions several times.
Yes.
Yeah. The steel helmets were pretty good, they were pretty comfortable, and they used to take quite an awful lot of bashing sometimes.
Were there occasions when the weather conditions were worse than they were thought to be?
Oh yes, you used to get jumping scrubbed as, you know, whilst you're airborne.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this in planing business is quite something, you know, number your stick off. You would all parade with the chutes fitted after you draw them, you fit them up to your own comfort. I mean, your quick release box should be either above your equipment or below the equipment, as the case might be, because you're all just like pregnant women, quite honestly, with the amount of equipment you carry. As long as your quick release box was obtainable, you couldn't sort of get at it in a hurry, because you had to sort of turn it and press it to release your harness, you see. You had to fit your own chutes, and then, at least rather prior to that, you always check the static line on the aircraft. Rather interesting one, it was before D-Day. We were checking these Dakotas off. I think I was stick command on this particular occasion. I had the 20 blokes inside of the aircraft, and always you get hold of the actual static line that's running down the, let me see, starboard side of the aircraft, where you used to hook to. You used to have to test this. The whole 20 chaps used to get on, and 1, 2, 3, heave, 1, 2, 3, heave, 1, 2, 3, heave. You'd test it three times, actually, to pass the aircraft okay for dropping. Well, the third time we checked this one, the actual strong point burst away from the tail end of the aircraft and just twang straight up to the radio operator's compartment. And of course, the Yanks were flyers. Oh, hell, that doesn't matter, fellas. We'll have another aircraft up for you. And every one of those chaps dropped.
Yes.
And at the court inquiry afterwards, they do reckon, in fact, that possibly number 1, 2, and 3 may have got out, but the rest of the stick had probably gone out, not realising that there was no strong point there. Of course, none of those chaps, their chutes wouldn't develop at all. It was rather fortunate. It was the only time I've ever known anything really go wrong like that on a drop.
Were there any superstitions?
No, sometimes.
At all that chaps
number 13 used to jump 12A perhaps sometimes, but There's no point in being superstitious about
them. No sort of little rituals that any of them...
No, it used to be in training rabbit's foot now and again. You used to see sort of skidding around or a particular photograph. But
nothing was regarded as an omen. One shouldn't do this or...
We used to love flying with the Yanks, so because so there were terrors on the dropping zone. They used to sort of, you know, go here and scare them straight across and not throttle back at all, hardly. We never thought so, they possibly did. There was a load of smoke on those aircraft, and they used to dish the fags out the camel and lucky strike galore in there. It was very good. And yet the RAFs, you know, flying the same kites, you were never allowed to smoke when the time took off until after you were down on the D zone. It was a really enjoyable career, I think. I had a pretty good war, really. I think the TA was the greatest part of it. It came out, sort of missed the comradeship as a chap, as you know, that sort of thing. And we had a jolly good time in the TA. I was on exercise Spearhead 2 in Germany, dropped from Watton in Norfolk. We flew out with the Americans in the C-82, the Fairchild packet jump. I've been across to Ireland, went with the Navy on MTBs from Gosport to Rotterdam, and spent about 10 days around the Arnhem area. Well, Holland,
yes.
Very good. Very good time.
May I ask what you did before you joined the army?
Before I joined?
Yes.
What do you mean, from civilian?
Yes, what were you in civvy street?
Well, I was just training to be an ironmonger, in fact, but... I was going to be a hairdresser, but I never sort of really sort of cottoned on to that idea. But I sort of volunteered underage and got away with it, actually. I was in the services a year before I found out I was slightly underage.
Yeah.
I was a little bit underweight for parachuting, actually. And originally when I went in, I had to put on a little bit of weight. Why, I don't know. I wish I could lose some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks very much, Liz, for... chatting to me. You'd actually, going back a little bit again, you mentioned you caught two prisoners. How did that occur? What was the incident there?
We were on a fighting patrol, in fact, but we didn't, although it was sort of semi-fighting patrol, wrecking patrol across the river, we were after two for information, actually, on the German OP across on the other side. We managed to get hold of these two, and we got them back, so I believe.
What were they doing? I mean, how did you surprise them, or? Well,
yes,
obviously you must have done it.
They're in a car, in fact. It was on a corner, we sort of got hold of them, and fired at the tyres, they sort of skidded around, and before they could even sort of get hold of their small arms, we had them. It was 10 of us, actually, in the section who did this.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I'll take a little bit of that there. I'll put it through.